As it's quite late, somehow or other, as usual, not quite late. I'll just read the translation and purport of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 93, translation and commentary by the Divine Grace of the Sri Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada. Ashradhana Purusha Dharmasyaja Paramtapa. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Therefore, the faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purpose of birth. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of Allah. Thus, faith is the most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yatha taramula nishechanena chityam sitat kantha pujo pashakha sado paharascha yatindriyanam tathaiva sarvahanam achitekya. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. Now the development of that faith is the process of Krishna consciousness. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious men. In the third class are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they have a complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue in Krishna consciousness. We have practical experience in discharging our missionary activity that some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive. And as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up this process and take to their old ways again. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. As far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well versed in the literatures of devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called a first class person in Krishna consciousness. And in the second class are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith that Krishna bhakti or service to Krishna is the best course, and so in good faith have taken it up. Thus they are superior to the third class who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures nor good faith, but by association and simplicity are trying to follow. The third class person in Krishna consciousness may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down. And for the first class person in Krishna consciousness, there is no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the result at the end. As far as the third class person in Krishna consciousness is concerned, although he has stated the conviction that devotional service to Krishna is very good, he has not yet gained adequate knowledge of Krishna through the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these third class persons in Krishna consciousness have some tendency towards karma yoga and jnana yoga, and sometimes they are disturbed. But as soon as the infection of karma yoga or jnana yoga is vanquished, they become second class or first class persons in Krishna consciousness. Faith in Krishna is also divided into three stages as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. First class attachment, second class attachment, and third class attachment are also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. Those have no faith even after hearing about Krishna and the excellence of devotional service, who think that it is simply eulogy, find the path very difficult, even if they are supposedly engaged in devotional service. For them, there is very little hope of gaining perfection. Thus, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. As stated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shraddha Manjan Hoy Bhakti Abhikari Uttam Madhyam Kanishta Shraddha Anushari. Faith is the basic principle by which a person can take to Krishna consciousness. One becomes eligible to take to Krishna consciousness if one has faith. And indeed, devotees are classified into three basic divisions, namely Uttam, topmost, Madhyam, middle, and Kanishta, or beginning, according to the level of their faith. Now, what does faith mean? In this particular context, there are many different kinds of faith. Just like today, one lady was telling me that she had firm faith in her guru. What? She's not initiated into Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. Kula guru, family guru. What does that faith mean? That faith is not based upon knowledge, because the guru actually has such gurus, they don't really teach very much at all. It's based upon material attachment. Such guru, shishya, sambandha, it's not on a transcendental platform at all. Arjuna himself asked this question of Krishna, because at the end of the 16th chapter, of course, Krishna was just speaking to Arjuna, it was later divided, but the after the chapter, it wasn't that Krishna was saying, now I'm speaking the 17th chapter. He was speaking continuously. But anyway, at the end of what is now considered the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke to Arjuna that one should follow the scriptures. Those who don't follow, here Krishna is talking about those in this verse that I've spoken on today. Krishna is speaking that those who don't have faith, and Prabhupada specifically translated this verse and put it into context, and those who don't have faith in devotional service, then they fall down from the path of devotional service because they don't have faith. And in the purport, Prabhupada analyzes how Madhyam Adhikari is one who has faith plus knowledge. Kanishtha means he has some beginning faith, not very strong faith. And Madhyam Adhikari means he has faith plus some knowledge. And Uttam Adhikari means he has faith, very firm faith, and knowledge. Exhaustive knowledge of Shastra. Now, so here, the faith, and the point of the discussion in this verse is faith. And in the purport, Prabhupada has established that faith means faith in Krishna based on knowledge received from the scriptures. In other words, not blind faith. At the end of the 16th chapter, Krishna speaks of another class of person who falls down. Apparently another category of person. Here he speaks of those Ashadadhana Purusha, those who are without faith. And in the end, towards the end of the 16th chapter, he speaks Yashastra Vidhi Mutsraja Vartate Tamakarasahava Nasavtidivamavnati Nasukam Naparamnatim. Krishna speaks of a category of person who from the discussion in the rest of the chapter is understood that these are actually money of they do not follow the prescriptions of Shastra. They not only don't follow, but they neglect and reject the injunctions of Shastra. And they act kama karaka, according to their own personal desire or their will. That means they don't have faith in Shastra. Then, they do not achieve perfection. They do not achieve happiness, nor do they achieve the supreme destination. Tasmat shastram samanam te kaya kaya vimasato jyata shastra vidhanam kaya kama iha. Krishna therefore concludes this chapter there that one should act according to Shastra. While living in this world, one should act according to Shastra. One should know what is in Shastra. Otherwise, how can you follow? Knowing what are the injunctions of Shastra, one should follow them. Then, Arjuna brings up the question of, well, what about those who act with faith, but not according to Shastra. They have faith in something else, which is not exactly according to Shastra. An example of this could be Buddhists. Now you may say, well, there were no Buddhists at the time of Krishna. But there were similar philosophies, even at that time. So Buddhists are people, they reject the Vedas. Nindasi yajya vidya ahashruti jata. Lord Buddha specifically criticized the Vedas and he rejected the Vedas because people were misusing the Vedas for that. For a particular purpose he did so. So then they made their own, they had their own Buddhist scriptures, but they're not the Vedas. So, people may ask, well, that's also some kind of scripture. They have faith in something. So Arjuna was asking that, what about people who have faith, but it's not in Shastra, and they also follow something? And there are many such people, humanists. They are a class of atheists in the Western world, who they believe in acting, they specifically, humanists, they reject the idea of any absolute spiritual principle of God. But they believe that everyone should act in a manner that is conducive for the overall welfare of the human race. And in that way they believe in being good and being moral. There's no spiritual basis to it. Sometimes, just like in school in India now, they teach, what is that, moral philosophy or some such thing. What's it called? Moral science. So be good, do good. And there is a subtle atheistic philosophy which promotes religion. And says that religion is very good because if people follow religion, they'll be moral. And that will be good for human society. So it's good if people believe in God because then it's good for human society. Actually, people who say like this, they have no faith in God. But they say, yes, religion is good to make people good. So we can live here happily in human society. So I believe in that moral science they also promote by that. It's good to, is it? It's good to go to here, yeah, a little bit, be religious, a little bit, be good, don't be. So, Arjuna was asking, what about people who have faith, but it's not exactly based on Shastra? So then Krishna, he took up this interesting proposition, interesting question by Arjuna, and he admitted, yes, that Shraddhama Yoyam Purusha, everyone has some kind of faith. Yoyat Shraddhata Eva Saha. And one is classified according, one is understood according to his faith. Just like we say, this person
a Christian. That means they believe. If you say this person's a Christian, then you generally understand they believe in Jesus, and He is the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father but through me. Of course, there may be divisions. There are many divisions among Christians, but this person is classified as a Christian according to their faith, or a humanist, or a Muslim, Hindu. Hindu, according to faith, may be a little more difficult to classify. Pandit Nehru classified Hindus as people who live in India and they're not Christians, Parsis, Sikhs, Muslims, or Buddhists. That was a definition by negation. Of course, Hindus are all over the world. And didn't really say anything about what Hindus believed, because it's very difficult to define. It used to be that, well, they believed in the reincarnation and the immortality, the sacredness of the cows, but you find people who are social, if they fill out their census form, they'll tick Hindu, but they don't believe in reincarnation and they eat cows also. So it's difficult to say exactly what. But anyway, in general, we can say that people are classified according to their, people are known according to their faith. Then the question comes that here in this verse, Ashradhana Purusha, Krishna is speaking of those who don't have faith. Ashradha. Lacking faith. But then later in Bhagavad Gita he says that Shradhamayo Yang Purusha, everyone has some kind of faith. Now sometimes people criticize that Prabhupada, you see, he's given a biased translation of Bhagavad Gita. Because Prabhupada translates this verse, those who are not faithful in devotional service. Now, there's no particular mention of devotional service. Here the word has been done. But Prabhupada has translated those who don't have faith in devotional service. But then it may be said that everyone has some faith in something. Krishna himself says that. So here we understand that when Krishna says that those who fall down, who don't attain me, that means that they don't have faith in devotional service. Because, bhakti-mahavijanati, those who do have faith in me, they attain me. So if everything has to be understood in context, and actually we can deduce from all these statements, even if you study in a logical manner, that Krishna is saying those who don't attain me, it's because they don't have faith. They don't have faith in what? They don't have faith in bhakti. So Prabhupada's translation here, those who don't have faith in devotional service, that is absolutely apt. That is what Krishna is saying. That is how Arjuna understood it. And therefore this Bhagavad Gita as it is, it's not simply Bhaktivedanta Swami's biased interpretation. As some biased people may say. So everyone has some kind of faith, but that faith that can be, actually the whole chapter 17 unfolds on the basis of that chapter 17 of Gita, the divisions of faith. So there's faith in the mode of goodness, sattvic, there's also rajasic, and there's also tamas, faith. Here Krishna is speaking about faith in bhakti. And practically we see that if we are to preach to people and try to bring them into Krishna consciousness, that those who already have faith in some other process, however ridiculous it may be, it's very difficult to change that. It's like this so-called Kalki Bhagavan that's going on up here. At the same time as the Hare Krishna satsang. So it will be very difficult to change people's faith, even if it's most, it is absolutely ridiculous. That, some guy was sitting in the LIC office and one day he thought, actually I'm Kalki. And he told others that, and now it's a whole cult. There's so many ridiculous things. And those who preach regularly now have so much experience, so many experiences. One young lady a few years ago came in chanting, oh, my guru is an incarnation of Lord Shiva. He's focused and he's a rascal. So it's for letting you believe such a thing.
oh, you started crying, where's my guru, oh, you sound like a guru, he's not a guru, he's a rascal, you're also a rascal.
So she was very upset and she went out crying. It's a fact. She couldn't accept it. So foolish. Some guy who the hell and who is, you know, claiming to be a Rishi. Very afraid. Definitely a very big rascal. But people believe it. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur, those of you who are on that BBK Sangha, you've seen, maybe 2 or 3 months ago, I sent out a quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur about Christianity. Now in some places, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote that, well, we should respect different ways people approach God, and some people call him Christ. But in one place it is Tattva Vivek, I believe it's in Tattva Vivek, which means that analytical study of facts, spiritual facts, Tattva Vivek. So he analyzed, he said there is a certain religion, turned out Christianity, even bigger than that. There is a certain religious process in which the followers, they believe that God sent a man and a woman to this earth, and then they ate an apple. And because of this, all subsequent generations of human beings have to suffer. So seeing this, God expanded himself as his son and came to this world and died. God died, as Christian philosophy. God died, and then God was not only died, but he was tortured to death. And if you believe in this, then you are saved. And if you don't, you burn in hell forever. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote that no intelligent person could possibly accept such a theology. It's asking us to believe in something which is just, there's no vivek, there's no tattva, there's no vivek, it's just ridiculous. It's actually insulting to God to say that he died and that it's insulting to him also. It's a very great offense to believe that he sends you to burn in hell forever. It's actually burning himself. So such religious processes, that people are enjoying to have faith in that, but people who have such faith in such processes, they're actually of the lower modes of material nature. Sattva-gun, sattvam sanjayate jnanam. Sattva-gun, that leads to development of knowledge. And knowledge means, sattva-gun is, that gives rise to a knowledge beginning of transcendental knowledge. So, anyone who's situated in the mode of goodness, they can't accept such a ridiculous theology. So these religious processes, that we see they're very much infected by the lower modes of nature. That's why people who follow them, they're inclined to eat meat. Especially Prabhupada noted that these apart from Bhagavad Dharma, all these so-called religious processes of the world are full of envy, which is specifically manifested as cruelty towards animals, slaughter of animals. So, people may have faith. People, just like I was saying, this lady was saying, I have strong faith in my guru. But that faith is not sharp. There is Bhaktivinoda Thakur Anga. There are two kinds of faith. One is Lokik Shraddha, or ordinary faith, which we can say is more or less Andhavitva, Andhavitva, blind faith. Even you see in Christianity, they have whole theology, they have so many books they've written. Thomas Aquinas, he was the main theologian of Christianity. And later there came others, Luther, Calvin. They've written so many things, but it's all based on a very shallow theology, as Prabhupada used to point out, that people, they say, believe in God, but what is there actually to believe in? They don't really have much to say about God. He's our Father, He's in heaven, He gives us our daily bread, and He's up there somewhere, and He punishes us if we do wrong. If we do wrong, we go to heaven. What do you do when you're in heaven? That is also, it's not defined. Who is God? You say you love Him, but how can you love Him if you don't know anything about Him? Just like if I tell you the name of, I know someone called Suresh Chaudhary. Do you know anyone called Suresh Chaudhary? Any of you know Suresh Chaudhary? You don't know. But you should love him. I'm not going to tell you anything more about him. He lives in Gujarat. And you should love him. Okay? And he's nice. He's a very nice person. But of course, if you don't believe in him, he might touch you. But otherwise, he's nice. So you should love him. Okay? Alright? Is that okay? That's what they're asking you to do. Believe in God. He lives in heaven. You don't know anything else about him. But if you believe in him, he'll be nice to you. And if you don't, he'll torture you in hell forever. And you should love him. So, where's the question of love? It's simply a blind kind of faith. And people who are in the lower modes of nature, they're attracted to such a kind of faith because they, in the lower modes of nature, one's intelligence is not developed. Of course, we see that intelligence may be developed for material things. So like here in Dubai, this is a showcase of the material advancement of the Western world, actually, you know, Asian people. But all the technology, of course, a lot of technology comes from Japan. Okay, so I'll give up my Western cultural chauvinism and admit that there are intelligent people east of London also. But this is like a showcase of modern material advancement. Some of them are very intelligent, and I've just seen this, I don't even know what you call it, it's like a mini computer come. What else is it? Mobile phone come, everything else. What is it? Yeah, the internet, and it's called a communicator. Do you know what it is? Does anyone know what a communicator is? Well, you can buy one from this fellow sitting here. If you like, pretty expensive. Anyway, they have so many wonderful gadgets which they've produced, so they are intelligent in some ways. But when it comes to spiritual knowledge, they're mostly completely not communicated to, or not communicable to, because they are blinded by so-called material progress. Dhana dharma dandhan. They're blinded by their material opulence. So such people, they are attracted towards faith in that which is not worth having faith. Ahamkare mattahaya nidai pada pasharya ashatere shatta kanimani. Means overcome by ahankar, thinking, I am very great, I am very wonderful. And that is very prominent in those who are enamored by modern, materialistic, technologically advanced civilization. They become mad. Mad in the sense that, although they may be, from a psychological point of view, balanced persons, although that also, many of the so-called balanced persons, they're actually inside their crazy. That's why they found, they did some study in America, I think America. Sorry for not being specific. 70% of the people during their lifetime take psychiatric treatment. So I mean 70% are at least somewhat crazy, or imbalanced, as they would call it. And the other 30%, well, they didn't go to the psychiatrist, but they're probably crazy too. And the psychiatrists, they themselves are the highest suicide rate. And they're crazy too. So, faith. People have faith in themselves. So they think, I don't need to believe in God. There was a song by John Lennon, the great. If you haven't heard of John Lennon, you didn't miss anything, but definitely in the Western countries, it's a very famous name. So he sung a song, and it's the way he sung it, it sounded something like a bhajan or a hymn. Just like a hymn may be sung, I believe in God. So he was singing, I don't believe, the same kind of emotion. I don't believe the Bible. Da, 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 da. I don't believe the Gita. Da, 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 da. I don't believe in Hitler. Da, 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 da. All like this. About 20 minutes. I don't believe this. And then finally, I just believe in me. I just believe in me, and then there's more to it. Yoko and me. Yoko is the name of his wife. Yoko and me, that's reality. That's reality. He took it that this is reality. So one day he came face to face with reality when he was walking out of his apartment and someone shot him dead. So, that was reality. So, people, they are ahamkari matoya nitai padapati. Ahamka means believing in myself. This is reality. I don't need, just like I was saying the other day, that excerpt from the drama, that merely gonti karna kakoi jarudi. Nikoi paapne kakoi achakam kakoi. So, gonti karna kakoi jarudi. There's no need for me to do that. There's no need for me to believe in God. I don't do anything wrong. I'm a good person. So people, they take this life to be all in all, but there's nothing beyond this. This is reality. And therefore they take that which is utter, that which is unreal, to be real. So this Dubai is a very good example. How it's not really real. Of course, in one sense it's real. We can't say this building doesn't exist. But simply this short life that we live and all the things that we collect around us to live in it, this does not constitute the sum total of reality. There's more to it than this. So even a religious process which puts stress, you believe in God and God will bless you with more money. That's also not based on reality. Or the idea that you should love God and then you go to heaven and then you just enjoy yourself. That also is not based on reality. It's based on the concept that I am the center of the universe. That is the materialistic concept of life. That I am, everything is meant for my pleasure. I am the center of everything. So even a religious process in which God is believed in for the sake of God should give me blessings so I can enjoy myself more, that is an egocentric religion. Religion should be theocentric, centered on God, that it is for His pleasure. Now, some years ago, one of the past Archbishops of Canterbury, he's the head of the Church of England. It's probably the, I'm not sure exactly, again, sorry for being short on statistics, but it's probably the second biggest, or the second second most influential Christian denomination in the world, the Church of England. So one of the Archbishops of Canterbury means he's the head of that Church of England. He was asked that, well, what do you want to do when you go to heaven? They were presuming he was going to heaven. Although, it may not. They presume because he's the head of the church, he should be going to heaven. But based on statements in Bhagavad Gita, we find it doubtful, actually. So, what do you want to do when you go there? So he said, I'll spend, this is the head of one, this is supposed to be one of the leading Christian philosophers. He should be, he's supposed to be giving guidance to others. So he said, when I go to heaven, I'll spend the first 100 years praising God. And the rest of the time, I will just enjoy myself. So this is faith. They say people have faith in God and faith in scripture. But it's not based on understanding of God as He is. It's not, there's not even much attempt to understand who He is. Like I say, if you're told you love someone but you don't have any information about Him, then how can you actually love? And what is the nature of that faith? That faith is going to be, we can say it's going to be very inadequate, blind kind of faith. So faith is required. I gave a whole lecture on that recently in Bangalore, on how even people who say they don't have faith in anything, everyone has some kind of faith. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Shraddhamayayam Purushana. Everyone has some kind of faith. There's no one who doesn't have any faith. Even if someone says, I don't believe in anything, then immediately you can ask them, do you believe what you just said? If they say yes, that means they believe in something. And if they say no, then that cancels that statement up. That means they believe in something. So everyone has some kind of faith. Even to walk down the road, you have faith that the earth will support you. So everyone has some kind of faith. You may not have faith. Your faith may be very restricted, that much we can say, but everyone has some kind of faith. So sometimes religion is criticized for being blind faith. Isha Kata Bhutta Bhagavan. Honorable Chapti, isn't it? So sometimes people they criticize that faith, religious faith is blind faith. So actually we don't encourage that. But at the same time, to some extent, at least in the beginning stages, faith may be somewhat blind, but not necessarily misplaced. Just like to take the very meaning blind faith, the very term blind faith, let us consider a blind man. A blind man takes guidance from others. Someone holds his hand and he leads him. The blind man has faith that the person leading him is his well-wisher, and that he knows where to go and he can see how to go. So he's a blind man, but he has faith, but it's reasonable faith. If a blind man takes hold of another blind man's hand, then that is foolishness. That is andha parampara nyaya. And what is that? Andha, what is yatha? How does that go? The last one? Andha yatha andai upaniyamana. The blind following the blind. And they all fall in the ditch. So, that a blind person may have faith is not wrong. To have faith in the wrong thing, that will then your faith is misplaced. That is useless. But a blind man, he cannot be benefited. He cannot do anything unless he take shelter of someone who is in a better position than he, with faith that this person is my well-wisher. So in one sense, like we may be said that we have blind faith, in the sense that we admit that we are blind. We are blind to what is the actual purpose of life, what is the meaning of life. We are blind to know what is for our ultimate benefit. We may think that our benefit is simply to amass more and more money and spend it. But factually we see that that doesn't satisfy us. Nor does it answer the questions that any intelligent person must ask as to what is the actual purpose of life, what happens after death, what is the purpose of this universe, is there God, if there is, what is my relationship with it. So living a voluptuous life means a life of sense enjoyment. That doesn't satisfy the soul. And generally people who are living living life in the fast track, as they say, they're just trying to enjoy life more and more. So by doing so, they try to cover up the questions which are in there. Naturally, it's in everyone's heart. Actually, what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of life? They just try to forget it all by intoxication, by more and more sex, and just going to parties, just cover the consciousness, cover the intelligence with more and more sense enjoyment. But the questions in the heart remain unanswered. So if we are to find answers to those questions, what is the purpose of life? What is the meaning of life? Then, first of all, we have to have faith that there are answers. That there is something more to life than simply eat, sleep, drink, be merry, and enjoy, for tomorrow I shall be dead. We have to have faith that there is something more to life than that. That is not unreasonable. Otherwise, if the only purpose in life is to eat, sleep, drink, be merry, and enjoy, then we should have been satisfied in that. But we're not. No one's satisfied. Some people, they think that they're satisfied. They pretend to themselves that they're satisfied. But actually, no one is satisfied with a totally materialistic way of life. Which suggests, if we analyze, just like you see, the only people are going to psychiatrists. Why? In America. Why in America? Where they have all material facilities. And why should they be mentally imbalanced, psychologically imbalanced? Why should they be? If the purpose of life is simply to get money and enjoy spending it, then you would think that in America people would be more actually happy and psychologically balanced. But the opposite is true. Which goes to show this actually indicates that there is more to reality than simply enjoying the body, enjoying intoxication, sex, and all these things. So, it's not unreasonable to presume that there is more to life, that there is a spiritual dimension, there is more to life than simply the grossly material dimension. So, in the beginning, that faith that yes, there must be more to life than this, if that faith is aroused in our heart, that means in our consciousness, so we may be blind, but to have faith in spiritual principle, that is not unreasonable. So in the beginning, that faith may be somewhat blind, means we can't ourselves see what is the path. But it is not unreasonable to accept that there may be others who can see. If one is blind, physically blind, then it doesn't mean that everyone is blind. And even if you're living in a home for blind people, there may be a place where, just like they have leper colonies, theoretically there could be a home for blind people. Probably there is some home for blind people. But then the people who are running that home, there must be some people who can see. Even if the majority of people are blind in the home, then there are some people who can see. So in the same way, in this material world, the majority of us may be spiritually blind. That doesn't mean that everyone is blind. The very fact that we desire to know about life beyond the eat, sleep, drink equation suggests that there is something there. The very fact that there have been great spiritual leaders in all traditions of the world suggests that there is something real, something there. So, faith in Krishna consciousness means faith in scripture, that it's not something simply some hocus pocus, some bluff. There's something real here. One may also have faith in Krishna consciousness, but in a very marginal manner. There are various levels of faith in Krishna. Just like Prabhupada more than once said that everyone in India is a devotee of Krishna. And Prabhupada gave us an example that among the Hindus, all of them, even they're not Krishna Bhaktis specifically, but they'll all celebrate Janmashtami, at least previously. And even the Muslims, he said, many of them, they have an inclination towards Krishna. So by devotee, Prabhupada here, he meant, at least most people have some inclination to Krishna. That doesn't mean that they're all pure devotees. Just like that lady I was speaking to, the lady and her husband I was speaking to, and she's saying that, well, our guru, he also teaches that you should worship Krishna, and we follow Guru Granth Sahib. So in that there's also, it says, Govinda Bhajan. So, but I was saying that actually they're ultimately, these people that are ultimately, they believe that ultimately you become Krishna or you forget Krishna, maybe, like this. And then she was explaining that our guru has said that there are two terms, dasoham and soham. So, in the beginning, you take dasoham, and when you become more advanced, then dalikaudam. You become, now I'm serving you, I'm your servant, and now I've become more advanced, now I am you. Now I'm doing arati, but after some time I'm going to stand up on the altar, throw the deity out, and you should do, everyone else should do worship. So it's actually a very demoniac idea. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Mayavadi Krishna Aparadi. Mayavadi, which means those who think that Krishna is also Maya. They think that Krishna's transcendental form is not Satyagananda. Avajananti Mahamudam Manashinkanam Ashutam. They think that Krishna's transcendental form is composed of material elements. He's just an ordinary man. Or maybe they say Krishna was a very, yes, I have great faith in Krishna, he was a very great philosopher. That is offensive. To say that Krishna was a very great philosopher and to consider him no more than that is offensive. Krishna was a very great man. That is offensive. Krishna is not a man. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So many times people have faith in Krishna, but it's misplaced due to having, just like this lady said, I have great faith in my guru. But the guru himself is not the right person to have faith in, because even though he talks to Krishna, he doesn't represent Krishna properly. So it's not that everyone who is speaking about Krishna should be listened to. Even if they appear to be great devotees, you'll find in many cases, people who are supposedly great devotees, they're actually in their hearts, they have no faith in Krishna. In North India, I'm giving an example. Throughout the whole of North India, the Ramanam Sampradaya is widely spread. And the Ramanandi, they chant Sitaram, 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 or variations of that. And they wear Vaishnav Tilak, and they constantly, especially the sadhus, many of them, they constantly chant Ram Nam. And like this, they apparently have great faith in Lord Ram, but if you discuss with them what is their philosophical understanding, you will find they will say that Ram hi Bhagavan hai. Lekin wo nirvishesh Brahm se aata. He is God, but he has come from the impersonal Brahma. Which means that they don't, when you say God, that means supreme, irreducible principle. Not that he is dependent on anything else or has come from any other principle. He is supreme. But if you think that he is coming from something else or is dependent for his existence on anything else, then actually that means you have no faith in him as the Supreme Lord, even if you call him Bhagavan. Because your understanding of Bhagavan is wrong. I think I talked before that this is many years ago I was at a Marwari temple at Hindustan Motors, just Hindustan Motors was just north of Calcutta. So they have a temple there of Radha Krishna and Lakshmi Narayan. And on the wall there was a picture showing material world, different stages. There's Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and then the water, Garbhadak Ocean, hellish planets, Pitri Loka, and then all the different Patala Loka, I think. Talatala, Atala, Sutala, Vitala, all that. Up to the 14 divisions of planets. And then above that, the coverings of the universe, coverings of earth, water, fire, air, ether. And above that, the Karnadak, the causal ocean, and then above that the Vaikuntha planets, Lakshmi Narayan, and then way on top of everything, Radha and Krishna. And above that a light with Om. So they got it right. Means you'll find such people, they may talk all Vaishnava philosophy and talk about the Leela of Krishna, you have to love Krishna, Krishna praying, but ultimately they have no faith that Krishna is the absolute substantive principle. They think that Om, impersonal Brahma, the light, that is all in all. So generally, we find many people, they have faith in Krishna and faith in various sadhus. But it's not properly substantiated faith. It's not Shastriya Shraddha. Shastriya Shraddha means that which is based on Shastra, actually not only on Shastra, but on the proper understanding of Shastra. Just like you'll find many Mayavadis who they can quote Shastra so much, and they'll talk about bhakti and how we should love Krishna, but their idea is that you do bhakti, and then when you become more advanced, then you come to the platform of jnana. They say that bhakti is good for the common people who are not so intelligent. And then later you come to jnana, then you don't need bhakti. But still you can do bhakti just to help the others, the common people who are stupid. So we have to be very careful, because often people who are supposedly bhaktas, actually within their heart, there is the wicked poison of impersonalism, which spoils, it's actually not bhakti at all. It's like the bhakti of a person who is serving the king very nicely, but just waiting for the chance to stick a knife in him and take over the position of the king himself. That is exactly their idea. We're doing bhakti now, and later, I myself, I will become God. I will become as good as, or if not the same. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Mayavadi Krishna Aparadi.
And such people, they can never have pure devotional service to Krishna.
That bhakti meet mukti priha yava pitati lidivati
tava bhakti sukhacha dra
abhyudaya. Anyway, Rupa Goswami has given the analysis
that
So,
as long as the desires for material enjoyment and liberation, impersonal liberation which is not meant to the servant of Krishna, as long as these witch-like desires, he has given the word pishachi, very dangerous witch, as long as these desires are within the heart, then one cannot actually experience what is bhakti. But people who are on the platform of lokik shraddha, not shastriya shraddha, they may have faith in shastra, but they don't understand Bhagavad Gita as it is, because they don't hear from pure devotees in the parampara. So they tend to be attracted towards people who show bhakti, but who actually, by their philosophical misconceptions, we can understand they're not in bhakti at all. Now, one common example is that of the Ramakrishna, so-called Paramahamsa, who many people presume to be a great bhakta, because he used to have some apparent ecstasies of in Sankirtan. He used to, because in Bengal, the Kirtan is very common, so he used to join that and have some apparent ecstasy. But then his main focus of worship was Kali, not Krishna. So he used to say, he'd do Kirtan, he'd say all the parts are the same, and when he's doing Sankirtan, he would have some apparent ecstasy. But then his main deity is Kali, and then that's against the principle of Krishna Bhakti. The principle of Krishna Bhakti is Mame Kam Sharanam Raja, to take soul worship, shelter of Krishna. So those who are actually devotees, they know that this is not actual bhakti. And even if there is some apparent semblance of ecstasy that has been discussed by Rupa Goswami Gopa in his book, by the way, I've been telling devotees this quite a lot recently. You must all study this book, Bhaktivedanta Samrita, Nature of Devotion. It's a very important book. Somehow or other, it seems it's becoming, among devotees in general, it doesn't seem to be read that much as it should be. Devotees read Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, maybe Chaitanya Charitamrita, even that not much also. But Prabhupada, he said this is the handbook of Krishna consciousness. It's essential for every devotee to read this book, especially the first half of the book. It's very important for us to understand at our level what is devotional service, why we should take to it, how we should take to it. So one of the points that Rupa Goswami discusses in that is shadow ecstasy. That sometimes persons, the very words he uses, that sometimes persons who actually have no real faith in devotional service, they may appear when they join in some kirtan or whatsoever. Some kirtan. They may appear to be overcome by ecstasy. But, as Rupa Goswami describes, learned scholars in devotional service do not accept that apparent ecstasy to be real ecstasy. It may be that they have some temporary emotional feelings, but the fact that when the kirtan finishes, they do not remain fixed in devotional service indicates that they were not actually in Krishna consciousness. They're not actually in the Krishna conscious stage of pure devotion, which would give rise to such actual ecstasy. Because if one was actually in the standard of Krishna consciousness by which he was overcome by ecstasy. And actually, devotees anyway, they don't show symptoms publicly for advertising to others. But if one was actually on that level, then after joining in Sankirtan, he wouldn't just worship Kali, because that's against the principles of devotional service, unless you're, I mean, there is the example of the gopis, but that's in Krishna Lila. That is also discussed by Jiva Goswami, how the worship of Katyayani by the gopis is, that's not to be imitated by those who are on the level of sadhana bhakti. In sadhana bhakti, one exclusively worships Krishna, not anyone. So, like this, many times she will come to Prabhupada or to Bhaktisiddhanta Sutta and say, well, I had a dream of Rasa Leela, this and that. But Prabhupada would say that, well, if you actually had the experience of Rasa Leela, then why are you going on with your materialistic life now? If you actually had the experience, then you wouldn't come back down to the material platform. If you're actually on the platform of being a gopi in Rasa Leela, then there's no question of coming back to mundane, social, secular life. So, there are many persons who are on a level of Komal Shraddha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls that Komal Shraddha. Jaha komal shraddha se kanishta jan. Krame krame teho hoibe bhakta uttam. Komal shraddha means very, not strong, very weak faith. Yeah, some faith, it means some kind of inclination towards Krishna. That's good. In the sense that it's better than being against the sense of Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, one may also have faith that is not unalloyed. One means it's mixed with faith in the prospect of enjoying this material world, or it's mixed with faith in the impersonal liberation. So it may be that people, they're doing some kind of bhakti, but actually they're more materialistic or they're more inclined towards impersonal liberation. So that's not pure devotion. There is a difference. Again, this lady and her husband, mostly she was talking. They were asking, well, what's the difference? You know, we worship Krishna also. Well, we drink tea and this and that, but you know, what's the real difference? So I told them at the beginning that actually to understand that you have to come to our satsangs regularly. You can't understand it. You know, it's not just by some little chit-chat for a few minutes, you can understand. Because there are so many misconceptions there already. Just like I said, we don't usually preach to people already fixed in some conception, even if it's as bizarre as Kalki Bhagavan. Because their faith is fixed in that way. Tasyachalam shradham tameva vidatamyaham. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yo ya yang yang tanum bhakta shatayachitam. So, Krishna says that persons who desire to worship various demigods, I as the super soul, make their faith strong. So that applies to all different kinds of faith also. That Krishna sees that a person has a certain inclination in that way, and he makes their faith very strong. And that's why even, you see, it's even if you discuss Shastra and logic, and so many times those of you have preached, you may have this experience, but even if you speak on logic and Shastra to someone who's convinced in another way, then even you can completely defeat all their arguments, and it doesn't make any difference. I once had the experience on a journey from Howrah to Delhi, speaking for about 3 hours with some Bangladeshi Muslims who were on their way to Ajmer. You know, there's that famous shrine in Dargah. So I was literally about 3 hours, and point by point, I was trying to establish that it's
God is a person. And each point, logical point, they were going this way, that side, squeezing out this way, putting in an illogical argument that way. But I just kept to the basic strand, and after 3 hours, they had no way to avoid. And then at the end they said, well, we don't believe it. Now what are we discussing? Why discuss? At all. You're trying to discuss on the basis of some logic. And if it's only faith, then why discuss? So actually such people are not worth discussing with. If they put their belief first, and then they fit the logic, or so-called logic, to fit it afterwards. So that we find in all spheres, whether it's just like you see, people believe in evolution, and they fit the so-called facts towards their theory. And anything which goes against that theory, then they find some old bones, that these bones are too old, okay, put them in the soup. Don't put them in the museum, put them in the soup. You don't know that because you're a vegetarian. I come from a degraded background. Some of you who also come from a somewhat degraded background can understand the analogy. Chicken soup. That's another. Now I'm digressing. There's a bestseller in the West, which I saw one of our DVCs had in his library, called Chicken Soup for the Soul. The soul doesn't need chicken soup. But the idea is that chicken soup is the thing that you don't get in a restaurant, but your nice, kind, loving mother will cook for you at home. And so it's all full of these sentimental things, how someone is nice to someone else. It's a little story that real life stories about how people are nice to others. So it's you know, one of those be good, do good kind of be nice to others. How to win friends and influence people and all this kind of thing. Be nice. Give others chicken soup. So when I go, we're a bones evolutionist theory. Yeah, people tend to believe what they want to believe in. And then they fit the facts and their so-called logic to fit it. Mostly people, which means that actually people are not sincere. They don't actually want to know what the truth is. And therefore, asatyare satya karimana, that which is not a fact, they take to be a fact. And then ahankari mastahaya, they are insane. They become crazy due to the, it all comes down to the idea that I should enjoy separately from Krishna. Now he may say, well, you know, you can't prove Krishna either. That lecture in Bangalore, I went through the whole process of discussing what is proof. These are actually very important philosophical points to understand. Mostly people come to Krishna consciousness maybe out of some feeling, some frustration. By good luck, they may come here and not go down the floor up. Pramanda Kamite Kano Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasad Kai Bhagavan Lagara Beach. Ah, Pramanda Kamite Kano Abhagavanji Kalki Bhagavan Kipai Nalaka Beach. They're already going to that. And they try to, this is described in Bhagavatam, that persons, they're already suffering so much in material life, and therefore they try to take some shelter of sadhu. But the sadhu himself is like a vulture who rips their eye out. Have you seen the vultures? They rip the eyes out first. So it's supposed to be Ajnana Timirandhasya Ajnana. The guru is giving sight, the sight of knowledge. But if you go to this so-called sadhu, then instead of
treating your eyes, which you are now blind, so that you can see, they rip it out altogether. And your stomach also. That's the next one. First the eyes and then the stomach. They like the intestines. So you go roll them out all of them. The vultures. On the battlefield, it said when the dogs come, there are so many dead bodies lying there, then they have so much to eat, there's so many dead bodies, so they only go for the best flavor, then they become gourmet. So they rip out from the dead body, especially they like the intestines. Isn't interesting. So you're taking shelter, and that another example is given. This is in the forest of material enjoyment in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. The persons, they're in the blazing forest fire of material life, and they come to a river and they jump in to get some relief. But there's no water there. There's only an appearance of water, and thus they fall down and they break their bones on the rocks. That's another example given. That they're thinking they're getting relief, but they're not getting relief at all. Rather, they're getting in a worse position. So, faith should not be blind. Shastra Shraddha. Not Lokik Shraddha. Simply some sentiment. People think, I have firm faith in my guru. But on what basis? There's no basis. Just that the guru happens to be their cooler guru. And somehow he satisfies them. They have material desires. And he is satisfied. Yes, I'm giving you blessings. Your family life, material life will be very nice. And they're satisfied on that platform. And they think we're spiritual. We also believe in Krishna. And they say, what's the difference between you and me? The difference is that of night and day. But they can't perceive it. Because they're blind. Their eyes have not been opened with the torch light of knowledge. They have no knowledge of what is the purpose of life and how to attain it. They've never heard from an actual guru, nor do they have any understanding of what actually is their function in relationship to a guru, how they should hear and become enlightened. They think a guru is simply a blessing machine. But that one should hear and understand knowledge from Shastra, from beyond this world of darkness, from beyond this world of death. They have no such conception. And therefore, even though apparently they are religious, they have a guru and they believe in Krishna, they're like a mouse in a ferris wheel. Shala Evahikam. Dharmat Swanushita Pum Sang Vishvak Sena Katasanya. No Tadi Yadi Rasim. Shala Evahikam. For all our religious activities, unless we gain a taste for hearing about Krishna, and again, hearing not simply as a formality or some kind of religious entertainment, but for the sake of understanding Krishna and our relationship with Him so that we can serve Him, then our so-called bhakti is shrama evik, it's simply hard work, mouse in a ferris wheel. You know that example? They, again, it's from Western way of life. In India they don't do such ridiculous things. They do other ridiculous things. But this particular ridiculous thing is a symptom of Western culture. People keep pet mice. That's pretty ridiculous. I mean, like I said, in India they do ridiculous things, but so far they didn't do that. Now they keep pet dogs. That's also ridiculous. But keeping pet mice hasn't yet become fashionable in India. Please don't take it up. Don't tell your friends either, because they might. Oh, people in the Western countries keep pet mice? I must have a pet mouse. So anyway, they keep pet mice in a cage. Some people. Not as popular as keeping dogs, but some people do. And a mouse in a cage hasn't got much to do all day. So they put a wheel inside that he can run on. And he runs, and the wheel goes round and round, and he remains at the bottom. He doesn't go anywhere. He's running, but he doesn't go anywhere. Because the wheel is simply going round and round. But for a mouse who hasn't got anything else to do all day, that's entertainment. So like that, it's
religious activities which do not lead us to a sense of surrender to Krishna. It is simply the mouse running on the ferris wheel. He's not going anywhere. He's simply passing time. Nothing better to do. So actually I had many things to discuss. I didn't even begin the thing I wanted to start talking about. Faith. What is the meaning of faith? Why we should have firm faith in Krishna? But anyway, we should. And if I say that without explaining it, then I'm asking you to blind faith. But I'll simply conclude this by saying, you study these books, Srila Prabhupada. Take the time to do so. Study them carefully. And develop your faith in Krishna consciousness on the basis of the Kshatriya Shraddha, not simply sentimental, logic Shraddha. Now, when I say Kshatriya again, that means not only faith in Kshatriya, but faith in Kshatriya means Guru, Sadhana, and Kshatriya. So Prabhupada at the beginning of this purpose says faith is created by association with devotees. When I'm associated with devotees, we have faith in Krishna according to the Parampara system Guru Sadhana Shastra. It's only the system. But anyway, there are other mentions which will be there in the future. So I'll finish that. Sorry, but it is getting a little late. And Mahamani Guru is looking at his watch. I'm looking at the clock. Tomorrow is another day. We have to write with full faith chant our rounds. So we should. Being pragmatic, Krishna consciousness is not a fanatical religion. We accept that we have these material bodies and they also need a certain amount of maintenance, such as sufficient food and rest, so that we can perform our various duties in this material body, including devotional duties. Question. Someone said question. I heard the word question. Any question about this subject matter? Now, the one important point I wanted to make, I never really, actually that was supposed to be one of the main points of the class, is why does our Krishna consciousness attack the other so-called opinions? Anyway, maybe I'll speak on that in a minute. Is it not partial, sectarian, and all those
kinds? Those who teach without faith, where do they?
No, everyone, you were saying those who preach without faith, but actually everyone has some kind of faith. But people are preaching a misplaced faith. Where do they end up? Well, Yadrishi, Shabda, Sadrishi. So you get what you go into. It's very difficult to say exactly what destination they will attend. For anyone. But generally we can say according to their faith, they get that kind of destination. Now that doesn't mean that because someone has faith in something mythical, that God has to invent it. But one may attain a situation, just like someone asked, that what happens if someone at the time of death they remember Jesus? So Prabhupada answered that they go to wherever Jesus is. Now, one may have faith in something, he may just imagine something and have faith in that. So he may think, well, where does he go to? He goes to this material world. This is the world of imagination, where you can make your dreams. Where you can attempt to make your dreams. Everyone in this material world is engaged in attempting to make their dreams. Everyone is living in a dream world. You see, it's a win 3 million dirhams on the lottery, or 300,000. So people talk about win your dream car. Everyone is dreaming. And according to our dreams, we try to create reality around them. then we find that even if we do get our dream car and our dream wife and our dream home, it's still a nightmare. Reality is Krishna.
Tomorrow's lecture has actually been organized in Ajma. Therefore, tomorrow, if you go to the camp, you won't have another venue to address.
Yeah, right, I was saying like that. We could do 8 to 10 in the camp instead of 10 to 12, as was previously suggested.
Okay. And then if you think you can have it over, how do you
No, that was the original suggestion.
Okay.
So, yeah, tomorrow, Ajma.
Yeah.
And then the day after that, the other camp.
So, the reason why I was just reminding about that was you wanted to discuss about the opinion. And I think...
Which opinion?
No, why it's not about talking of other people's opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
A particular topic. I think, you know, it's going to take another 10, 15 minutes.
No.
It's going to be a problem, yeah.
No.
If you can give us an option. Still we can wait for you for the next time.
Well, synopsis is that faith should be in that which is real. Other kinds of faith are useless. To believe in something which is not true, you may believe it as much as you like, but it is not of any benefit to us. 2 + 2 = 5. You believe it as much as you like, but it won't make it true. So, we should understand, there must be a process to understanding what is real, if there is reality, as distinguished from illusion. And if we don't accept that there is reality distinguished from illusion, then we simply become a Mayavadi. Mayavadi believes that there's no distinction between reality and illusion, that ultimately everything is just illusion. So they say this material world is a dream, but ultimately they think everything is a dream. Everything is mythical. Nothing's actually real. They say Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. But actually their definition and everything is there's no difference between Brahma and Jala. So ultimately they say everything is Mithya. There's no difference between Satya and Mithya. So if we are to be Vedavan or accept that there is a difference, there are differences, which we experience at every moment of our life, and you can't even begin to discuss, even at Vedavan, without accepting that there is difference. At Vedavan, they say there's ultimately no difference, but you can't even discuss it without accepting that there's a difference between, for instance, the terms that the word Satya denotes one concept, and the word Nitya denotes another concept. Although they say it's all one, but you can't even discuss how it's all one without accepting that certain terms, they denote certain concepts which are different from each other, otherwise there'd be no language. If everything was all one, then you can't even talk. Because every word would mean the same thing. And so, book and, what is this called? Speaker? Mic. So if it means the same thing, then where is there to discuss? Nothing to discuss. Is that right, Nanda Kumar? He's Nanda Kumar, isn't he? Isn't it? I mean, he's the same. They're all the same. It's all one. It's meaningless. It's ridiculous. So, reality, if we are to accept that there is reality distinguished from illusion, then everyone is confused over as to what the nature of reality is. Therefore, the Bhagavatam, in the very beginning, states that this Bhagavatam, it delineates what is reality as distinguished from illusion. That's how Prabhupada translated. Vayam Vastavam Abja Vastu. This Vastu, this is the Vastavik Vastu of the Vedas. Veda means knowledge. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the actual substance of Vedic knowledge. This is not concerned with Kailava Dharma, which apparently presents reality. It presents to persons who are on the platform of illusion, it presents to them what they think is reality, but which isn't actually reality. Most of the Vedas are cheating also. According to this Kaitava Dharma project, the Atra. Herein, cheating religion is rejected. Narad Muni also talks, Jugupsitam. If they ask you, have written something, it's not good at all. So that's from one, of course, from another perspective, the Vedas were written for the uplift of all human beings. But on the other hand, unless and until one comes to the point of the actual essence of the Vedas, then it doesn't actually distinguish reality from illusion till one comes to the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very clearly to the need. So that distinction needs to be made. But we don't have clear vision. We are confused as to what is the nature of reality. And many people come and say many things. And because it seems spiritual to us, we accept it as reality. Or even, you see, many of the things that we say, many others will also say. And just like you're saying, that lady, then she'll say, you see, I'm worshipping Krishna, you're worshipping Krishna, what is the difference? What is the difference? Then you have to go very deeply. Because many times, that which is illusory is presented as that which is real. And even it may have superficially the elements of that which is real. Namely, worship of Krishna. People are worshipping Krishna. But their worship is based on the platform of illusion because they don't understand or accept what is Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is our position as eternal servants? They don't accept that. Da nikaldam. Da soham da nikaldam. Soham. So they don't accept, they're envious of Krishna. So because people are, you see, just like any worship, if you see any puja, whether it's demigod puja or Kalki Bhagwan puja, whatever, you see how the arti is going on for Krishna, seems more or less the same. Anyway, called Shastra also. So, how to distinguish reality from illusion, that is required, and especially because in the modern age, it is an age of cheating. There are very many rascals who, in the name of religion, present that which is cheating. Therefore, it is required to point out that which is unreal to separate it from the real. Synopsis. Apart from that, Prabhupada said that I always call the rascals the rascals. I chastise them. So that I enjoy them. For me, it's a pleasure to call the rascals. No, actually, Giriraj Maharaj said, you always call them rascals. I said, yes, you should. They deserve it. It's a pleasure to call them. It's his pleasure to serve Krishna in that way. Just like Krishna, he personally killed so many demons. And he had others killed by Arjuna and demons, particularly these two. So Prabhupada, he said, I want the benediction from Krishna to fight for him after the last breath, just like Arjuna. Arjuna was killing, that was his service to Krishna. The devotees, they should also clearly understand what are the teachings of Krishna consciousness and not confuse